Modern sector. The modern sector, as contrasted to traditional sector, is essentially an exchange sector economy. It is characterized by output surplus meant for sale and is to be found largely in plantations and manufacturers organized on modern lines. The essential organizational setup of the sector is its conduct on capitalistic lines. It exhibits following three features. One is use of reproductible capital like machines, buildings, etc. It marks the dependence of production on man-made capital rather than on the land, which is not man-made. Second, it is the existence of wage labor. Workers are not the owners of the capital equipment. They only sell their labor, for which they get paid in wages. The third is the profit making that provides the motivating force to the entrepreneurs who undertake production in modern sector. Social dualism. This is next subheading under the dualism of less developed economies. First was traditional sector, second modern sector, and now social dualism. Some, however, regard economic dualism, that is traditional and modern sectors, as an insufficient representation of reality. They enlarge its canvas to include the entire social milieu of each sector and name it as social dualism. The one is traditional society or pre-capitalistic society with human relations, mores very much feudalistic in their contents. This is in contrast to the modern capitalistic society with new relations, new work ethos, and new morality of the market, where everything has a money value. Obviously, there is a clash between the social spirit that has in the past given rise to and sustained the traditional sector and the forces that pervade the modern sector. The various features of underdeveloped countries described above are such as form parts of a piece. Together, these bring up a grim picture of economic conditions of these countries. So, this finishes the main characteristics of underdevelopment. So, just quietly sit and recollect the headings and subheadings, that is the main characteristics, and under those main characteristics, which were the main features of these main characteristics. So, first one was economic backwardness, and the eight features covered under this were low income, underused natural resources, predominance of agriculture, predominance of primary exports, insufficient capital and traditional techniques, illiteracy and skill shortage, serious population pressure, and last one was underemployment and disguised under unemployment. Then, after economic backwardness, the second main characteristic was institutional and market imperfections. Under this, the two subheadings or the two features were defective institutions and fragmentations and distortions of markets. Then we covered third main characteristic, that was dualism of less developed economies. And under this, we covered three main parts. What were those? Traditional sector, and then modern sector, and third one was social dualism. So this completes the topic under development. Next topic is population growth and urbanization. This is topic number 7 of your textbook, and it starts with page number 86. There are few topics marked in the content of this book and which I would read further. The topics which we would cover under population growth and urbanization are demographic trends, size and growth of population, density of population, distribution of population, state-wise and rural-urban, age and sex composition, life expectancy and literacy rate, growth of population, and under this, very large size. So these are few topics which we would start up now. Human beings are both ends and means for the economic activities. When in right numbers, they are an asset, but not so, in fact, a liability if the number is beyond the capacity of the economy. A study of subject is thus called for because it is a vital to the progress of the economy and to the well-being of the people. We discuss its various aspects in four chapters. This chapter deals with the following: demographic trends, growth of population, theory of demographic transition and urbanization. The subsequent three chapters enlarge upon the themes of population and economic development, human capital and occupational structure. So the first heading is demographic trends. The present features of population are the resultant of the past developments. Hence, to appreciate the current population problems, it is necessary that we dilate upon the demographic trends as these have emerged over time in past. These trends relate to the various angles from which population growth can be looked at, as its number, its density, age and sex composition, etc. So under this, the first subheading is size and growth of population. The first and the foremost fact to know about the population is its number and the rate of its growth. And under this, the first thing is large size and fast growth. As per 2001 census, the population is over 102.7 crores or 1.02 billion. That is 1,027,015,247. This number has grown at a rapid rate in the past, beginning with 1921, but more particularly since 1951, when the population at 36.1 crores was about one third that at present. The growth rate since 1951 has been around 2%. It was particularly high at about 2.5% during the two decades, that is 1961 to 71 and 1971 to 1981. This fast rise in population has been caused by growing gap between a slowly falling birth rate and a rapidly declining death rate. As between 1951 and 1998, while the birth rate came down from 42 to about 27 per thousand population, the death rate went down from 23 to as low as about 9 per thousand population. Since the last census in 1991, the population has grown at rate of about 2%. As a result, the size of population has grown further. It is at present more than 100 crores or more than a billion. With the birth rate at present at 27 and the death rate at 9. This is per thousand of population. The population has since 1991 grown at a rate of just 1.93%. Then comes adverse consequences. The absolute number is indeed very large and the growth in it much too fast. This is obvious from several angles. One is that the density of population, that is the number of persons per square kilometer, has worsened. The condition has become very worse. Although this increasing density by itself is not bad, it nevertheless signifies the growing burden which a backward country cannot bear. Two, The population is certainly having adverse effects on economic development. Much of the current production is used for the maintenance of population through the provision of consumption goods, leaving little for saving and investment. Little can also be spared for the skill formation of labor force. 3. With national income growth at around 4% since 1951, the per capita income has grown slowly at over 1.5%, thus affecting adversely the welfare of the people.
Now comes density of population. This is about the number of persons per square kilometer. What is it? Number of persons per square kilometer. It is arrived at by dividing the number of persons by the total land area of a given region or country. Rapidly rising density. The density of population has been rising since 1921. The increase has indeed been a rapid one from 1951 onward. As per the census, it is 324 in 2001 as against 274 in 1991, 216 in 1981, 177 in 1971, 142 in 1961, and 117 in 1951. This, however, is the all India picture. At state level too, this has happened. But the change in density has varied from state to state. In some time, it has increased much, in others, not much, and in some, it is little indeed. Even within the states, there are differences in density in the different regions. Now comes interstate or regional differences. Since the size of population has been rapidly rising, it is but inevitable that given the geographical area of the country, there should be an increase in density of population. However, equally and perhaps more important are the differences in the density of population of different states and of regions within the states. The reasons for these differences are not so far to seek. India is primarily an agricultural country. Factors like climate, rainfall, irrigation, facilities, etc. have a large bearing on the cultivation of the land. Since these factors vary considerably in various states, regions, large differences are bound to exist in the density of population. In North India, land is very productive and the density is therefore very high. As against this, in Rajasthan, because of sandy soil and deficiency of water, the density of population is low. So, in the case of Jammu and Kashmir state within mountainous area and of Madhya Pradesh with rocklands, etc. Another factor has been unequal development of industries in different state regions. In some of the states, great strides have been made in industrial progress, resulting in the growth of industrial towns, cities, and trading centers. All these centers attracted large population. As against this, state regions which have not registered much industrial growth have small density of population. Besides, there are other factors that have influenced the density in different places. Among them, some important ones that have increased density at some places are the regions and historical importance of those places, the availability of education facilities, and the existence of the administrative offices, etc. Then comes density and economic development. In this connection, it needs to be noted that although economic factors influence density of population, it is not sure index of either the poverty or the prosperity of a country. The density of population of USA is only 31, yet it is most prosperous. Brazil density is 20 and Australia density 2 have lowest densities, yet they are not as developed as USA. At the other end in England, with a higher density of 247, and yet it is one of the most advanced countries. The same can be said about Japan and the density at 221. And Netherlands with the highest density of 469. Thus, there is no distinct relation between density of population and the progress of the country. And the same should apply to India. But one thing can be said about India with certainty. Being an agricultural country with some not much industrial progress, the country is finding it difficult to bear the burden of present high density of population. Since the population is on the increase, the burden will become more unbearable unless there is a control of population and a faster rate of economic growth takes place. Now we will study distribution of population, state-wise and rural-urban. The population is distributed very evenly as among states and as between rural and urban areas. And this is a reflection of many diverse factors. One is the interstate variations. The human population inhabiting different states varies considerably. According to the census of 2001, Uttar Pradesh continues to be the state with the largest population at 166 million, accounting for 16.17% of the total for the country. It is followed by Maharashtra with 9.42% and Bihar with 8.07% of total population. As before, states in northeast like Sikkim continue to be inhabited by small population. These variations indicate the fact that the reorganization of the country into states and union territories has not been done on the basis of population, but on some other considerations, namely like language, cultural, administrative, political, etc. While this is so, it should be emphasized that given the initial distribution before and after the reorganization of the country, much of the differences in population is due to difference in the growth rate of the population in different states. The differences in the growth rate of population of different states is as before, much in evidence also in the census of 2001. As against the decadal national growth rate of 21.34% during 1991 to 2001, some states grew at rates much above it and some grew at much below it. The growth rate at Bihar is much higher at 28.43%. At the other end are the states with growth rate much lower than the national growth rate. The lowest is in respect of Kerala, with the growth rate at 9.42%, followed by Tamil Nadu with 11.19% and Andhra Pradesh with 13.86%. While this depicts the interstate differences, it is also points to the need for tailoring the population control measures to suit different situations. Then comes rural-urban differences. So, under rural-urban differences, another striking feature of India's population which has persisted for long is predominance of rural population. As per 2001 census, as many as 72.2% of the population lives in rural areas. The urbanities constitute 27.8%. as against 78% in England, 77% in Sweden and 74% in USA. See how large number of population stays in urban in all these countries. As against in India, how much I told? It is only 27.8% of urban population. Over time, since 1951, there has been a change in rural-urban population, but only of some significance. Overall, the picture remains the same, so that the Indian economy can be as well be described as a rural economy as against Western economies often designated as industrial urban economy. This trend depicts the economic structure of Indian economy. With inadequate industrial development, there is little increase in the industrial employment. The result is twofold. Urbanization, as indicated by urban population, is no doubt more than before. But it is still very small in magnitude, and since agriculture continues to be the main occupation of the people, rural population is very large indeed. Then we will study age and sex composition. Another aspect of population is its composition age-wise and sex-wise. These influence economic activities as also the growth of population itself. Now first we will study age composition. Age composition. The information on the age composition is of significance for several reasons. One can know the size of labor force, that is, those falling within the working age of normally say 15 to 59. This number constituted 57.7% of the population in 1991. Another significant segment is that the children who fall in the age group of 0 to 14. This accounted for 36.3% of the population. This is quite a high proportion when juxtaposed with the portion of children in developed countries at 20 to 25%. That is, what you understand from this, the Indian population for children is 36.3% when compared to other countries wherein developed countries you find 20 to 25%. Now we'll read further. The cause of high percentage is the high birth rate. A large fall in the infant mortality rate from 146 per thousand in 1951 to 80 per thousand in 1991 has also contributed to this. The large proportion of children is indicative of the large number of unproductive consumers. This means that the burden of the dependence on the population is excessive. Old people above 60 years are about 6% of the population. This percentage is small of the low life expectancy of the Indian population. Now we will read sex composition. This shows the number of females per 1000 males. Information on this together with that on age composition is very important for many things like marriage rate, population growth, etc. In general, the death rate among females compared to that of males is low because of the biological reasons enabling female to resist diseases more effectively than males. Thus, if the proportion of females is low, the death rate will be affected favorably. Sex composition also influences the marriage rate and the number of children. Further, an unfavorable sex ratio, that is, when the proportion of female is small, this leads to the emergence of many moral and social evils. As per 2001 census, there are 933 females for every 1000 males. In all, the total number of males is 53.12 crores, which is about 52%, and that of females is 49.58 crores, that is around 48%. Over time, the number of females per 1000 males has been falling except for the decade 1971 to 81 and the decade 1991 to 2001. The female-male ratio differs widely in different parts of the country. There is again a large difference in the female ratio, that is female-male ratio, as between urban areas where it is lower and in the rural areas where it is higher. No generally acceptable and satisfactory explanation can be given for the overall picture of the lower number of females. However, a few reasons can be indicated. One of that girls in India are not as adequately looked after as boys. As a result, infant mortality among girls is high. Secondly, the burden of bearing children at an early age, the lesser use of birth control devices and the greater frequency of births at short intervals lead to death of many a woman. Thirdly, it is doubtful whether at the time of census women are counted correctly. Because of large illiteracy and social customs which keep many women behind the curtain, quite a number go unreported. 4. As for larger female-male ratio in rural areas, one of the possible reasons may be the fact that the male goes out of the villages to work in cities, leaving their women folk behind. Last but not the least is the all-pervasive male child preference, which has been the cause of female feticide. Now we will study life expectancy and literacy rate. Trends in the life expectancy as also in the literacy rate are relevant in considering the improvement in the quality of life as also in the productivity and the female size in the country. Generally, longer life expectancy and higher literacy rate improve the level of civilized and cultural living, enhance productivity income of the people, and reduce the size of family through a fall in the birth rate. Now we will study both life expectancy and literacy rate. We will see what those two terms are. Life expectancy. The number of years for which people of a country expect to live at the time of birth is the average life expectancy of that country. It depends mainly on the death rate and the age at the time of death. Thus, if the death rate is high or death occurs at an early age, the life expectancy will be low. On the other hand, if the death rate is low or the death occurs at a late stage, the life expectancy will be right. It will be high. At the beginning of the last century, life expectancy in the country was very low. In the period 1901 to 1910, it was only 23 years. In the next decade, it was estimated to be even lower at 20.2 years. It started rising though slowly after 1921. The rise became substantial from 1951. Life expectancy was 41.3 years in 1961, 45.6 in 1971, 50.5 in 1981. At present, it must be how much? Yeah, at present it is over 63 years. The recent large increase in life expectancy has been caused by substantial fall in the death rate and in infant mortality rate. Even as such, it is much less than the developed countries. Over there, it is 77 years. Now we will study the literacy rate. The literacy rate has been on the increase with a sharp setup in the latest 1991-2001 decade. As per 2001 census, the literacy rate at 65.5% marks a 13.3 percentage point rise over the previous rate of 1991 at 52.2%. Literacy rate among males is 75.85% and among females is 54.16%. As for states, there are great variations among them. Literacy rate in Kerala is the highest at 90.92% of the population. This is followed by Mizoram at 88.49%. Bihar recorded the lowest literacy rate at 47.53%. Despite an uptrend in the illiteracy rate, it continues to be low and much below that achieved elsewhere, and as such, it is unsatisfactory. For example, the literacy rate is 100% or near about in Sweden, the USA and the England. No doubt the rate in India has gone up substantially since 1951. It is also possible to say that the literacy rate will continue to witness an uptrend in future. However, it needs to be emphasized that the pace of increase in past has been very slow. What does this mean? It means that the literacy rate is increasing, but at a very slow pace, right? As such, greater efforts including larger resources and a change in education policy favoring schooling of the entire population in elementary education have to be made if the literacy rate is to be stepped up sharply. Now we will study growth of population. India's population is very large in size and it is growing rapidly. This has posed many difficulties in the way of economic development. It has also prevented a significant rise in the per capita income of the people. It is therefore necessary that we dilate upon this growth, its causes, and interpret the growth trends in terms of most acceptable formulation about population, namely the theory of demographic transition. Now we will study very large size. So under growth of population, we are going to study very large size part. According to 2001 census, the population of the country is over 102 crores. This comes to around 1/6 of the world population, which means that every sixth person in the world is an Indian. Next, only to China, India has largest population in the world. While India's population is 16.7% of the world population, its land area is only 2.4% of the world land area. See what a difference, like its population is 16.7%, but its land area is only 2.4% of the whole world land area. Thus, a significant population of the world population is found jam-packed in a small geographical area. When compared to other countries, India's population in relation to land area far exceeds the population of many countries. It is so large that it is larger than the combined population of all high income economies, which includes the USA, the UK, Japan, Germany, etc. But when we consider land area, we find that USA alone has 3 times more land than that of India. Here we complete the topic population growth and urbanization. So all the important topics which were marked have been covered. The next topic which we will cover is unemployment and employment. This is 11th topic of your textbook. This is 3rd topic of what we are reading and 11th topic in your textbook, page number 133 to 153. Unemployment and employment. The employment situation in the country is marred by a number of ugly marks. Large many are underemployed, many are without work, quite a number, though educated, find no or little work to use their talent or skill. In this chapter, we will take up the subject of unemployment to explain its various types, its magnitudes, its problems, its causes, its remedies, as also government's policies in this regard. We also dwell upon the much debated problem of how to use the vast surplus labor of the country in terms of famous models of NERCS and LEWIS. N-U-R-K-S-E, NERCS and L-E-W-I-S, LEWIS. At the end of the separate section is devi. At the end, a separate section is devoted to a serious matter concerning educated unemployment.
Now we will study types, magnitude and problems. To begin with, it is necessary to acquaint ourselves with the frame in terms of which the problem is to be analyzed and its dimensions size. This requires first a description of various types of unemployment, its magnitude and the nature of the problem that India faces. So first we will study the types of unemployment. Okay, types of unemployment, underdeveloped economies. So we are going to study types of unemployment under what? Under the underdeveloped economies. By and large, our concern will be with the description of different types of unemployment in India, and for that reason with most of the underdeveloped economies. However, the types of unemployment that exist in the developed countries are also taken up to spotlight the difference between the two. So first comes structural unemployment. Basically, India's unemployment is structural in nature. What we are studying? Structural unemployment. Basically, India's unemployment is structural in nature. It is associated with the inadequacy of productive capacity to create enough jobs for all those able and willing to work. In India, not only is productive capacity, that is largely capital stock, much below the needed quantity, it is also found that increasing at a slow rate. As against this, additions to labor force are being made at a fast rate on account of rapidly growing population. Thus, while new productive jobs are on the increase, the rate of increase being low, the absolute number of unemployed persons is rising from year to year. This sort of unemployment is not a temporary phenomena in the sense that it will pass off on its own after a lapse of time. It is chronic. It requires for its solutions the application of long-term measures for remedying the defects in the economic structure. In other words, it is the development of the economy alone that can take care of unemployment. While this is the basic nature of unemployment in the country, it has taken different forms, for example, disguised unemployment, underemployment and open employment. Besides, there are special problems of unemployment, for example, seasonal unemployment and educated unemployment. We briefly refer to these types of unemployment. Now we will read disguised unemployment. This refers to the unemployment that is not in the open for everyone to see. It remains invisible. So disguised means what? It remains invisible. For example, in Indian villages where most of the unemployment exists, in this form, people are found to be apparently engaged in agricultural activities. But such employment is mostly a work-sharing device. That is, the existing work is shared, howsoever large may be the number of workers. In such a situation, even if many workers are withdrawn, the same work will continue to be done by fewer people. It follows that all the workers are not needed to maintain the existing level of production. The contribution of such laborers to the production is thus zero or near zero. There are some who feel that very large number of workers on Indian farms actually hinder the agricultural operations, thereby reduces production. Here, it may be useful to distinguish disguised unemployment from full employment. The latter, that is full employment, is defined as a situation when everyone is able and willing to work gets the job, or when everyone who wishes to work at the going wage rate for his type of labor is employed. In the case of disguised unemployment, everyone only seems to be fully employed. It is so because a larger number of workers than required is sharing a given amount of work. As such, it appears that nobody is without work. But this, of course, conceals the fact that there is no full employment, as the workers are working to their full capacity. The proof of this is that the output does not fall if a part of labor force is withdrawn. In case of full employment, however, all the workers contribute to the output, and a withdrawal of a part of the labor force will cause a fall in the production. Now, next is underemployment. It is a situation under which employed people are contributing to production less than they are capable of. For example, a diploma holder in engineering, if for the want of an appropriate job starts shoe shining, may be said to be underemployed. Apparently, he may be deemed as working and earning in a productive activity and in the sense contributing something to production. But in reality, he is not working to his capability, nor to his full capacity. He is therefore not fully employed. Here too, his underemployment is disguised. Open unemployment. Under this category fall those who have no work to do. They are able to work and are also willing to work, but there is no work for them. Such an unemployment is in the nature of involuntary idleness. They are to be found partly in villages, but very largely in cities. Most of them come from villages in search of jobs. Many originate in the cities themselves. Such unemployment can be seen and counted in terms of number of such persons. Hence, it is called open unemployment. Open unemployment is to be distinguished from disguised unemployment and underemployment. In that, while in the case of former workers, that is open unemployment, workers are totally idle. In the later two types, they appear to be working and do not seem to be idling away their time. Seasonal unemployment. It is so called because it occurs at certain seasons of the year. Associated mainly with agriculture, it is a widespread phenomena in Indian villages. Agricultural operations, being dependent upon nature, are such that in a certain period of the year, there is heavy work, while in the rest, the work is lean. Around sowing and harvesting, for example, there is such an amount of work to be done that agriculturalists may have to engage themselves day and night. As against this, the period between the post-harvest and before the next sowing is almost worthless, rendering many without work. Educated unemployment. It is concerned with joblessness among the educated, that is matriculated and higher educated. Of these, there may be some suffering for open unemployment. There may again be others who are underemployed, belonging to the category of what we have earlier termed as underemployment. The latter type of unemployed persons may not be getting work suitable to their qualifications to enable them to make full use of their capacities. Mostly, towns and cities are faced with this problem of educated unemployment. By this, we come to an end of types of unemployment in which economies, in the underdeveloped economies, and also we come to end of side B of cassette number 1. I hope you remember the topics we covered in this cassette. Yes, so we covered two topics that were underemployment and some parts of population growth and urbanization, and we started off with which topic? Yes, unemployment and employment. Under this we were going to study what? Types, magnitude and problems. And we started off with types of unemployment, and more specifically we started off with types of unemployment in underdeveloped economies. And we covered all the types of unemployment in the underdeveloped economies. Which were those? Structural unemployment, disguised unemployment, underemployment, open unemployment, seasonal unemployment, and educated unemployment.